All right, Shabbos, good morning. An incredible daf actually ahead of us today. Today's daf is Nun Zayin. We have a lot to do. We are picking up on Nun Vav Amud Beis at the second to last Mishnah on the daf. It's four lines before the lines get wide. Our shir this morning is dedicated by Josh and Becca Friedman, Le'ilui Nishmas, Josh's father, Rav Chaim Rafael, Yisrael Yehuda, Ben Rav Chaim Rafael, Semi and Malka Esterson, Le'ilui Nishmas, their parents, Yitzchak Le Ben Aaron Akoin, Sa Rachel Bas Baruch, and Hinda Bas Henech Ephraim. We hope that in the merit of our Talmud Torah, the Neshamas will have an aliyah, and the families a Nechama. Both of that, let us begin. Incredible Mishnah. Kolak Suma Abami Rakem Torah. Both say, any Ksamim, any articles with a stain of clothing, with a stain of blood on it, that come from the city of Rechem. Rechem was in the north of Eretz Yisrael, the opening Mishnah in Meseches Gittin. So any Ksam that come from Rechem to Horim, they are tahar. The Rabbi said, now what's the logic in that? If you look at Rashi, Habayim Merekim Torim, Shin Ovdei Kochav Medam Tahar. So apparently the majority of residents of Rechem were not Jewish, and therefore blood that came from Rechem was assumed to be tahar. Remember again, the blood of non-Jews does not convey any kind of Tumas Nida, of course. Rabbi Huda says, no, it's Tamei, why would Meshem Gerim Etoim? The residents of Rechem were in fact Jewish, not only were they Jewish, they were converts. Not only were they converts, ultimately again, but they were not very well versed in halacha. Therefore, again, they often did not know to either put away, throw away, or launder their garments with ksamim of nida. Therefore, you have to assume that the ksamim are tamein. Habayim ibein ovdei kochavim torin. In general, ksamim that come from ovdei kochavim are tahorin. Right? Because remember again, ovdei kochavim have no din of hilchos nida. Mibein yisroim ben akusim. We'll say so again. If stains, however, come from Yisraelim, Jews, kusim. But remember again, we always come back to the discussion of kusim, whether or not they are legitimate converts. Rabbi Meir says, ultimately, again, it's tamei, because halacha l'maisa, again, we assume that kusim ultimately are Jews. V'chachamim mitarim. And the chachamim ultimately say that what? That the ksamim are tahar. Mipnei shlo nechshedu al kismehen. Because at the end of the day, they are not nechshad on their ksamim. So we'll say, so fundamental machlokas, ultimately again, regarding the status of kusim vis-a-vis this halacha. So says the Gemara, kaposek vatani afilu mitarmut. So we'll say, so again, kaposek vatani, Rashi says over here, haboim mibena ovdei kochavim tohorim va'afilu mitarmut. Alma b'nei tarmud b'nei ovdei kochavim gemara. So what's the Gemara quotes a memra that says like this. Rabbi Yochanan says, the Braisa says, that even from Tarmud, namely, ksamim that come from the city of Tarmud are tahorim. What does this mean? That the residents of Tarmud were considered to be non-Jews. Because they were considered to be non-Jews, therefore the ksamim do not pose any kind of problem. So the Gemara says, is that true? Rabbi Yochanan is also Meris, mekablim gerim mitarmud. They're both saying, now the fact that we're going ahead and labeling the residents of Tarmud as Ovdei Kochavim indicates to us what? That halacha l'maisa, we are mekabel gerim from the city of Tarmud. They're non-Jews. Therefore, if they wanted to convert, they would have the ability to do so. Ini, is that so? V'ha, Rabbi Yochanan, v'savya d'amritar vayhu, ein mekablin gerim mitarmud. B'et Rabbi Yochanan and Savya, right, both said that what? That halacha l'maisa, we do not accept gerim from Tarmud. Now, both said, this is actually quite fascinating. Why don't we accept gerim from Tarmud? If you look at Rashi, Zosomeres mekablin gerim in a Tarmud, uksherim lava bekal, v'lomrina mamzerin hein. Now, both said, there was a great concern that the residents of Tarmud were mamzerim. Why? Listen to this. Shenis arvu bebenos aseres hashvatim, va'ovid kochavim ve'evet haba bas Yisrael havlad mamzer. So we'll say, so the Gentile residents of Tarmud either again had the status of ovdei kochavim, just non-Jews, or avadim, slaves. Either way, the residents of Tarmud intermarried with Jewish women. There was, and I remember again, there's a fundamental machlokes as to ultimately, again, what creates mamzerus. Remember again, we paskin that the only thing that creates a mamzer is what? Chayve krisos. Chayve misa, chayve krisos. Right? An illicit relationship punishable by death or by kares. So remember again, there is the opinion of Rabbi Akiva, perhaps the most machmir position of Rabbi Akiva in Gans Shas, which is that even chayve lavin creates mamzerin. So Rabbi says, so the marriage between a Jewish woman and a Gentile man, or a marriage between a Jewish woman and an Eved, is an Isser Doraisa, is a biblical prohibition, but it is not punishable by death. So what's interesting over here is this opinion holds that the residents of the fact that we're saying that halacha lemaisa, you can accept gerim from the residents of Tarmu, tells you that what? That ultimately again, they're not mamzerim. So remember, we just said before that you could even accept gerim from Talmud, right? Is that true? Actually, Rabbi Yochanan and Savia both said that we're not mekabel gerim from Talmud. Why not? Because there was a whole mixture of mamzerim in that population. So the Gemara says, V'chi tema zos v'lo sirale. Maybe you'll say that's the opinion, but they don't hold of it. V'am Rabbi Yochanan halach k'stam mishnah. But yet Rabbi Yochanan said, halach afal stam mishnah. Amorayim nehu. Rabbi say there is a fundamental machlokis amorayim. V'aliba d'Rabbi Yochanan. And Rabbi say one of the opinion sides with Rabbi Yochanan. So Rabbi say, so bottom line, although we're not exactly sure what to do with the residents of Talmud, the truth is that's really secondary to our discussion over here. Primary to our discussion about is a simple halacha that says that what? That any type of garments stained with blood that come from primarily Gentile populations will not be problematic. Only blood-stained garments that come from centers of Jewish population ultimately, again, will pose some type of problem. Now, of course, we get into the more contentious situation, which is, what do you do with kusim? So the Gemara says, Mibein Yisrael, the Rabbanon will say, so if the Rabbanon hold that even stains that come from heavily Jewish populations are still going to go ahead and be tahar, then I will say under what circumstances will a stain be tameh? In reality, the Mishnah is missing a piece, and here's how you have to read it. Here we go. Says the Gemara, Mibein Yisrael tameh. If you have a blood-stained garment that comes from a primarily Jewish population, it's tameh, because we assume, what is that? That's dam nida. Mibein akusim. What happens if you have a blood-stained garment that comes from the kusim? Rabbi Meir metameh. Rabbi Meir says, ultimately, again, it's tameh. Why? The kusim gere emesein. So what's because Rabbi Meir holds that kusim are Jews. Gere emes means they're proper converts. They are Jewish. And therefore, halacha lemaisa, the ksamim that come from within that community are going to be tameh. Mechamer tarim. The Chachamim ultimately say that it's tar. Why? The kusim gere arayosin. Chachamim say that the ksamim of kusim are not problematic. Why? Why? Because they're gayim. Because ultimately, again, they're not Jewish. They're part of the nations of the world. Therefore, we'll say in other words, their conversion ultimately, again, is not legitimate. Gere arayos means they converted because of the outbreak of lions. That's the idea. There was the outbreak of lions after they were resettled in Eretz Yisrael from Kusan. Therefore, they only converted because the lions, not out of a legitimate fidelity to Yiddishkeit. Hasidic Gemara says, "Ihachi shlo nechshedu al kismein ger arsi." By the way, if that's the case, then the reason the Chachamim say that some of them are not problematic has nothing to do with shlo nechshedu al kismein. Rather, it should say gerei arayos. That ultimately, again, they're not proper converts. Elahachi kamer. This is what it means to say, "Mibein Yisrael ben kusim tmeim." So in reality, if a blood-stained garment comes from Jews or from kusim, it's going to be problematic. Why? Because halacha lemaisa, kusim are Jews. Kusim are Jews. Hanim tzayim ba'ari Yisrael tohorin, shol nechshedu al kismehen, va'atznuei mitznaylu. But I will say, if you find a blood-stained garment, where? In cities of Jews, right? Cities of Jews. Ultimately, again, that blood-stained garment is tahor. Why, I will say? Because Jews do not keep garments of clothing stained with dam nida. Rather, meaning they don't keep that around for a simple reason. Why? Why? Because it can, right, besides that, it doesn't look good. Right? Right, good. That's aside from the, right? Because it conveys tumma. Because it conveys tumma. It doesn't make sense to keep something like that around, where again, ultimately, it could really compromise your taras and your kachim. So therefore, if you find a blood-stained garment in a primarily Jewish population, the assumption is that halacha lemaisa, that is not dam nida, it's something else, because they put away their nida garments. What happens if you find blood-stained garments in a city of kusim? Rabbi Meir says it's tameh. D'nechshedu al kismehen. Rabbi Meir says they're tameh, even though, again, I will say, in this model, everyone's agreeing that was the status of kusim. Everyone's agreeing that what? That halacha lemaisa, they're Jews. They're Jews. Now the point of contention, Rabbi Meir, is are they well-versed Jews or not? Rabbi Meir says, no. They're Jewish, but they're not learned in the halachos of Nida, and therefore, unfortunately, they keep the blood-stained garments around. The Chum at time, the Chum say no. Ultimately, again, even Miben Akusim, the blood-stained garments will be permitted. Why? Shelo nechshedu al kismehim. Because at the end of the day, we assume they know what they're doing regarding their ksamim, and therefore they don't keep it around. So bottom line, halacha lemaisa, that... Excuse. Right? So bottom line, halacha lemaisa, the Gemara says as follows, that what machlokis by kusim, which is our general machlokis by kusim that runs throughout Shas, Geire Arayos, or Geire MS. And ultimately, again, we see the impact of that. Blood that comes, obviously, from Ovdei Kochavim is not subject to the halachos of Nida. Dam that comes from Yisrael is subject to Hilchos Nida. When you find dam that comes from a city of Jews, even then, there's a shaila as to what you do with that. Do we assume that's dam Nida because it's Rov Yisrael? Or do we say, no, Jews know that you don't keep out blood-stained garments of Hilchos Nida because of all the different ramifications of it. Therefore, Allah Chalamai, so we could attribute that to a different type of dam, subject to Machlokes as well. Good. So we'll say, so the one definitive part that comes out of here is that blood that comes from Ovdei Kochavim, what's the status? Totally tar. That's the one definitive piece over here. How you attribute to how you understand blood that comes from Jews or blood that comes from Kusim, subject to Machlog. It says in the Mishnah, So we'll say, and in general, whenever you find Ksamim, whenever you find a blood-stained garment, this is talking about now within a Jewish city. So you find a blood-stained garment in a Jewish city. So we'll say, what's the halacha? You assume that it's tahar. When you say it's tahar, we don't assume that it's dam nida. We assume it's some other kind of blood, right? It's from a wound or something else, but it is not dam nida, with the exception of blood-stained clothing that is found bichadarim. And I will say, this is fascinating. So sometimes if a person had a blood-stained garment that was dam nida, that they did not want to throw out for whatever the reason, they would put it away. So if you find stored garments with blood on them, chances are that's dam nida, because it was put away. Or bisvivos beis hatumos. Or for that matter, in the area of beis hatumos, we'll say this is fascinating. Beis hatumos, Rashi says, beis hatmeos, Rashi says, cheder, shanoshim ishtam shos bo mineni dusan. This was a room, it will say, that women often used when they were anida. So we'll say, remember again, when you're talking about times where there's kachim, where there's taras, so when a woman is anida, so remember again, she has to be exceptionally vigilant and careful with what she is touching. So apparently, historically, they had certain rooms that were used by women when they were anida. This was the space that they utilized when they were anida. So obviously, if you go ahead and you find blood-stained garments, right, in those areas, in those chadarim, then ultimately, again, you would assume that's dam nida. Beis HaTmeos Shalkusim, Metamin Ba'oel. So let's listen to this. The Beis HaTmeos, which are the rooms that are used by Kusi women when they are nidos, ultimately, again, have Tumas Ohel. But we'll say Tumas Ohel means what? That ultimately, again, they convey Tumah via roof Tumah, which means there's a corpse in there. What does that mean? Why? So, Mimpneishin Kovrin Shamas Hanafalim. Because when Kusi women miscarried, they would often bury the nafal, they would often bury the fetus, which could convey Tumas Mes, depending on the stage in which it was miscarried, ultimately, again, in that room. Rabbi Yehuda says, "Lohayu kovrin ela mashlichin." Rabbi Yehuda says they wouldn't bury the fetus there; rather, they would just throw the fetus into that room. V'chaya gorarto, and then animals would come and take the fetus. You don't have to worry about tumas ohel because there was no fetus that would actually remain buried there. So ne'emanim lomrim kavarnu sham es hanafalim olo kavarnu. So the kusim are believed to say we did bury fetuses there. We didn't bury fetuses there. Ne'emanim similarly again. Ne'emanim lomar ala behima im bichra im lo bichra. Kusim are believed to say about whether or not a certain animal had already given birth to its bechor offspring or not. Ne'emanim al tzion kvaros. Similarly again, kusim are believed, ultimately, again, to indicate where a marked grave is. Ve'in ne'emanim lo ala sichachos, ve'lo ala praos, ve'lo al beis hapras. But they are not believed, Rabbi Yosei, regarding sichachos. We'll discuss it in the Gemara. It means tree cover over graves. They're not believed regarding protrusions, which has to do, again, with overhangs that have tumah ramifications. We'll see in the Gemara and Beis HaPras. We'll say Beis HaPras. We're also very familiar with that is a field that you know there was a grave in the field, but the field was plowed over. There's now a general concern that there are bone fragments throughout the field. So kusim are not believed regarding these things. Rabbi says, so what is the klal? Zeh klal davar shechashudim bo ein ne'emano, which Rabbi says makes sense. In general, right, kusim, anything that they are suspect that they violate, they are not believed in that general area. So we'll say, so remember again, so what it's saying is, now we know kusim in general did not believe in Torah Shabbat Peh, right? They did not believe in any type of verbal law, Torah Shabbat Peh. They only believe in Torah Shabbat. That's why, so in general, again, we know by kusim, any mitzvah that they kept very well. Anything that they did not keep, they totally disregarded. So the Mishnah essentially says that halacha l'maaseh, anything that they are chashud on, ultimately we can't believe them, but anything they keep, we do believe them. Top of Nun Zayin, Rabbi Yosi, here we go. My Darish. So Rabbi Yosi, interestingly enough, the kusim, what's interesting is there's an interesting historical factor, which is kusim didn't bury miscarriages. They didn't bury fetuses. Why not? So the Gemara says, "My darish lo sasig gavul re'acha asher gavlu rishonim benacha l'asecha." So I'll say, this is incredible. So I'll say, remember again. So this is the isser of hasagas gavul. So in a literal sense, what it says is you can't move your property markers, right? In other words, if I have property markers on my field, I can't move over my property markers onto my friend's field to encroach upon their property. We know that not midrabanan, but Torah Shabbat Peh expands this to mean what? Hasagas gavul, which means encroaching on other people's business, encroaching on other people's parnasa. So the Gemara says, kol sheyesh, so how did the kusim darshan? This is incredible. Kol sheyesh lo nachla, yesh lo gvul. Whoever has inheritance, that's right, whoever has inheritance has gvul. They both say, kusim translated gvul as what? As a burial place. Based on a number of different drashas, right? Ultimately, again, so that's how they darshan gvul. So whoever has kolosasi gvul reacha, when can you not deny someone a burial place? Asher gavlu rishona benachala secha, when they have a nachala. But if the person doesn't have a nachala inheritance, then what? They don't have a gvul. Kol sheyesh lo nachala, yesh lo gvul. Kol she'ein lo nachala, ein lo gvul. Ultimately, a fetus does not have inheritance, so because it doesn't have a nachala, therefore it doesn't get a burial place. So we'll say, just want to point out something amazing. What's the mussar in this? Right? What do you think about that drasha? What do you think about it? It's a great drasha. It tells you something amazing. That when you want to convince yourself of something, you could always make the most incredible drushes and say them enough times, and suddenly again, the drushes actually sound very feasible. Say it enough, it actually sounds like a din d'oraisa. Say it a few more times, and it actually sounds like the Ratzon Hashem. It's an incredible ability to convince yourself of what you really want to hear and to ignore some of the objective realities that are around you. Even the kusim are making drushes, just not the right ones. Ne'amanu mumar kavarnu. We'll say next. So ultimately, again, kusim are believed to say, we buried a fetus in this Beis HaTmeos. So I vaha les lehu lifnei iver. So we'll say, so remember again, kusim, this is very important. Kusim aren't bad people. Right? Kusim, the issue with kusim says we just don't know what to do with them. I mean, there might be bad kusim, but in general, when we talk about kusim, sometimes I feel like they're not bad. We just don't know what to do with them. The problem is they're a bit lost because we're not sure about their conversion. And even if we say that they are legitimate converts, one thing is absolutely clear, which is they rejected areas of halacha, which is exceptionally problematic. So the Gemara says like this, you're telling me now, that ne'emanim lomar kavarnu, right? Kusim are believed to say that we buried fetuses in this Beis HaTmeos. In which case, again, their Beis HaTmeos, this room, ultimately could convey to us ohel. So the Gemara says, one second. V'ha'les lehu v'lifnei iver lo sitei michshol. We will say, in the Kusi Beis Medrash, how do they darshan v'lifnei iver lo sitei michshol? What's the definition? What's the title of that pasuk? Do not place a stumbling block in front of a blind person. That is literally, that was the extent of the halacha. And I will say, we know what does lifnei iver mean? Of course, it means don't put a sign by in front of a blind person. What else does it mean? It means don't go ahead and create a situation where someone else is caused to sin. Right? Stumbling block is not necessarily literal. I mean, it is literal, but it's also metaphoric. Do not create a situation where someone else stumbles over an isser. So the kusim don't have that drasha. So in kusi world, there's absolutely no problem with going ahead and doing something that causes someone else to stumble. That's not a biblical prohibition for them. So we'll say, now listen to this. Look at Rashi just a moment. Kusim don't care whether or not you become tamei because of something they did. We'll say, it's not... I'm sorry? What today? I don't know which.
Lo darshi le b'machti.
Lo darshi le b'machti. Oh, did I read it wrong? Okay. Lo darshi le b'machti. I'm sorry. Lo darshi le b'machti. Velo ichpas lahem im anu chotim apiem. So we'll say. So what happens? So remember again, the kusim. They're not worried about enabling or about potentially causing someone else to sin. Again, I will say, just because they don't have that drasha, ultimately, again, of lifnei iver. So what does it matter to... So we'll say, remember, what are we saying? Akusi is ne'eman to say that what? Akusi is ne'eman to say that halacha l'maisa, nothing's buried here. Well, why should they be ne'eman? I will say, remember, again, ne'emanos comes from the fact that I am believed to say nothing's buried here, because, again, I would not want to cause you to sin, or in this case, to become contract to mas ohel. But a kusi, it doesn't matter to him. I will say there's no concept in their halacha of not causing someone else to sin. So if there's no concept like that in their halacha, how can they be believed? How can they have credibility regarding this particular issue? To which the Gemara says, Rabbi Avoh, Bekoin Omecham. So Rabbi Avoh says, what's the case over here? There's a kusi kohen who is sitting there, right? There's a kusi kohen who's standing in this area. There was, remember again, kusi kohanim are also subject to the halachos of tumah. If they're subject to the halachos of tumah, then what? Then ultimately, again, he wouldn't be standing there if it's a makom tameh. The fact that there's a kusi tameh that's sitting there, Bosei tells me that what? That halach lamaisa, the area is tar. The Gemara says, v'dilma kohen tamehu. Maybe the kohen's already tameh. To which the Gemara says, dinakit truma biyadeh. Ultimately, we'll say, what's the case? The case is where the kohen is holding truma in his hand. So we'll say, see, even if you want to say that kusim are not vigilant, so we'll say, it's not a question of even a vigilance. They don't have the concept of lifnei iver lo site michshol. So because they don't have the concept of lifnei iver lo site michshol, therefore we'll say they can't have ne'emanos. I can't be ne'eman about something, legabe you, if I have no imperative to prevent you from doing something wrong. So therefore the Gemara sets it up over here. What's the case? The case where there's a kusi kohen standing in this area holding truma. He would not be standing in this area holding truma unless what? Unless the area is absolutely tahar. V'dilma truma tamehu, t'ka'akamine. So maybe he's holding truma tamehu. Maybe he's a kohen tameh holding truma tamehu. Ihachi maila memra. So if that's the case, okay, well, what do you want? So the Gemara says, ma'al detema, lo biki biyitzir. It will say, because maybe I would have thought that what? I might have thought that the whole issue of here, I will say, is that maybe kusim in general are just not versed in what constitutes a birth and what doesn't constitute a birth. Look at Rashi. Lo biki biyitzire, v'chi kavri nefel, lo yodi duhu ben memyom, v'savri maya ba'amuhu ve'ena matame. We'll say maybe the issue over here is that kusim in general don't know at what point does a fetus convey tuma, at what point doesn't it convey tuma. Kamash on that halacha lamaisa, we assume that a kusim know at what point a fetus conveys tuma, at what point it doesn't, and because they themselves are careful with the halachos of tuma and tara, therefore again they are ne'eman ultimately again to tell us whether or not there is a fetus that is buried inside of the cerebral. So just you should understand this concept over here, that because a kusi is not worried about lifnei iver, therefore again he doesn't go ahead and worry about someone else. I will say, so again, remember, our whole concept of achrayas for one another comes from this drasha of lifnei iver lo siti michshol. I can't do something that is going to go ahead and cause you to sin. Without that drasha, there is a certain level of mutual responsibility that is missing from the relationship. It's fascinating that Kusin, because they don't have this drasha, the Gemara says, therefore can't have the ne'emanos. Therefore, setting it up as a case where ultimately what? There's a Kusi coin that's there. If there's a Kusi coin that's there, the Kusi coin is careful with Tumantara. Therefore, Allah Chalamaisa, they have ne'emanos. Good. Ne'emanon ala behema. So we'll say next. They are believed regarding a behema to say that this behema gave birth to a bechor. In other words, we'll say what this case is as follows. I see an animal give birth. Right? It has a firstborn. It has a bechor. So Rabbi will say, what am I not sure of? Is that really the firstborn of that animal? Or did the animal already have its bechor and this is not the bechor? The nafkamina, of course. Is this a bechor or not? In other words, does it go to the kohen? Does it not go to the kohen? So I'll say, so the Mishnah told me that a kusi is ne'eman. Ultimately, again, a kusi is ne'eman to say that this animal is or is not a bechor. So I'll say, same issue. Why should a kusi be believed regarding something that impacts my observance when a kusi is not commanded against placing a stumbling block in front of another person? Amar Rabbi Chiya, what's the case? Amar Rabbi Chiya bar Abba, Rabbi Yochanan, begozeis va'oved, where I see the kusi literally working and shearing that animal that was born. Now remember again, a kusi would not work and shear that animal if what? If it was a bechor. Because halacha l'maaseh, he also has the din of bechor, to which the Gemara says, hachi ma'ala memra. If that's the case, so what is there to say? So ma'ad detema lo b'ki betinuf. I'm at a thought, Rabbi, that what? That maybe kusim are not generally well-versed in what? In tinuf. Rabbi say tinuf means what constitutes a birth, legabe bechor. So maybe what a kusi thinks is a bechor is not really a bechor. What was a bechor is not a bechor. Kamashal, no, kusim are very well-versed in halachos concerning firstborn animals. Good. Ne'eman and al-tzion. Both is fascinating. So a kusi is believed to say this is a grave, right? So the Gemara says, va'afagav demirabonanu. Both say this is quite fascinating. There is no biblical obligation to mark graves. Right? They both say, again, the only obligation we have is to bury a corpse in the ground. That's the obligation we have. There is no obligation to mark graves. In fact, the concept of marking graves is much more of a utilitarian measure to ensure that people do not contract tumah. So we'll say, if that's the case, then why are kusim believed to testify about the presence of marked graves, to which the Gemara says, afagav de midrabanon. Even though the concept of marking graves is a din derabanon, keva dechsiva mishev zehiribi. Since it is a pasuk, the kusim are careful with it. Where's the pasuk? Tichsev, bera'a etzem adam ubana tzion etzion etzlo. So it says, the Gemara go over here, quotes the pasuk from Yechezkel, you will see the bone of a person and you will build a tzion. We'll say tzion literally means a monument, a grave marker by it. So we'll say, because this is a pasuk in Yechezkel, and kusim in general are careful with things that are written, therefore kusim are believed to testify regarding marked graves. Aval eina emanalo ala sichachos. But we'll say they are not believed regarding sichachos. What's sichachos? Is actually quite fascinating. Sichachos, this nan, elohein sichachos. They will say these are the sichachos, like lashon of schach. Ilan ha-mesach ala aretz. So I'll say, this is actually quite fascinating. What this is talking about over here is as follows. Imagine for a second you have a tree. You know, the good, you can imagine it's like a willow tree. But it doesn't have to be a willow tree. It can be any tree that overhangs. So remember again, if you have a tree whose branches extend, that tree creates an ohel. Right? So if there's a corpse underneath, that those branches, then what? Then halach l'maisa, anyone standing underneath those branches contracts tuma, even if they're not standing within dalet amos of the grave. So we'll say, so the case of sichachos is as follows. You have a tree with multiple branches. And I will say, here's what I know. I know that there's a grave underneath one of these sets of branches. Not under both, but under one. So what the Mishnah is saying over here is that the kusi is believed to say what? I'm sorry, the kusi is not believed, right? In the case over here, the Mishnah says, ve'einet ne'eman alo ala sichachos. So we'll say, so the kusi is not believed to say what? The grave is under branch number one and not under branch number two. That's the case that the kusi is not believed to testify about that. If you look at Rashi for just a moment, Rashi says, "Ilan amesach ala aretz v'hu samuch l'derech beisakvaros zimin dimistrami bein hashmashos v'kavri hasam v'ma'anafim uvdalim she'in ha'ohel shalim v'yadua v'adei she'yisham kevertach ha'sa'olos v'ein yadua ezehu." I don't know which under which branch the grave is situated. V'akusi meyed al echazet v'al echazet. So I'm sorry, al echazetar enor ne'eman lefi she'eno chash ala safek v'tola tuma ba'ol sheni misafek. So we'll say, interestingly enough, there's a safek case. So apparently, kusim in general were not careful with safek situations. So we assume that the kusi is just making an arbitrary decision. The greater is under branch number two and not under branch number one. Therefore, we can't go ahead and rely on him. That's the case of sichos. What's the next case? Pros. What's the case of pros? This non avanim pros ayotas mina geder. So we'll say pros are the case ultimately again of protrusions. Imagine for a moment you have a wall or you have a fence, and sometimes again there are protrusions that come out from the top of that fence, and perhaps again there's a grave underneath one of those protrusions. Or we'll say it's the same case as the tree, just in this case, instead of going and using branches, we're using protrusions from a stone wall. Either way, you get multiple protrusions. I know there's a grave under one of them, which means there's tumas ohel under one of them. And the kusi tells me it's under protrusion number one, not protrusion number two. And the halacha, the Mishnah tells me they're not neman. The kusi is not neman. Now, we'll say, interestingly enough, the reason the kusi is not neman is because we assume in general that kusim are not vigilant in cases, of safek. Beis HaPras. What's the Beis HaPras case? Rabbi says it's incredible. I'm Rabbi Yehuda Mishmuel. Menafech adam Beis HaPras v'holich. Rabbi says, remember again, the Beis HaPras is the grave, is the field in which you know there was a grave. What else happened over here? The grave was plowed over. The field was plowed over. What's the concern in the Beis HaPras? That there's a bone fragment somewhere inside that field. So there's a rabbinic tuma on that field. So how do you navigate the field? So Rabbi Yehuda Mishmuel. Menafech adam Beis HaPras v'holich. A person will say could walk on the field and do what? And blow on the dirt in the field. Blow on the dirt in the field. What does that do? So we'll say the good news is that if there are bone fragments, where are they? Towards the surface of the soil. So if you blow on the soil a little bit, you could expose any bone fragments. If you have a Beis HaPras that was plowed, ultimately, again, it is tahar. So we'll say plowed. I shouldn't say plowed. Really means walked upon. Rashi says nidash beragli adam sharaglayim nosim esat samos v'shachkum. So we'll say if you have a field that was a Beis HaPras, that is a heavily traveled field, it no longer is problematic. Why? Because we assume that because of pedestrian traffic, any bone fragments were smashed to pieces that are too small to convey tuma, or were simply kicked out of the field. Betana, hachorish Beis HaKvaras hare osa Beis HaPras. We learned that if someone plows over a cemetery, it makes a Beis HaPras vad kamahu osa, and we'll say how far does it extend? Melo ma'ana, mea ama. Base are ba'asin. Have you seen Rechamish? So we'll say, so again, machlokes ultimately how far out the Beis HaPras will extend. Is it 100 amas, 4 sa'ah? Rabbi Yossi says 5. V'lo mehemni. So we'll say, is this true that a kusi is not believed regarding a Beis HaPras? V'hatanya, sada sha'avad ba'kever. We'll say, if you have a field, this is actually a fascinating case. You have a field, and I know that what? I know there was a kever there. There was a grave, but what? I don't know where the grave is. What's that halacha? Ne'aman kusi lomar ein sham kever. Right? A kusi is believed to say that there is no kever here. There is no kever here. Or there's no kever in this particular area. Why? Lefi she'eno meyid ela al gufo shel kever. Rabbi say, this is fascinating. This is fascinating. A kusi is not believed regarding any situations of safek in halacha. But a kusi is believed to convey what we'll call factual information. So for example, I'm both saying, if let's say I have a field that had a kever, right? Or I have a field that ultimately, again, I had a field that I know there was a kever here. The issue is, I don't know where the kever is. A kusi is believed to say, the kever is not here, right? He's believed to say the kever was never in the northeast side of the field. Why? Why is he believed there? Why, I will say? Because he's not testifying. He's not regarding a halacha. What is he testifying regarding? A metzius. Just a fact. A fact. And if he's confident about the fact that the grave is not here, or the grave is here, then ultimately, again, we could take his testimony for that, which is quite interesting. So similarly, again, ilan shumesach ala aretz. So let's say, going back to the case before, if you have a tree that extends over the earth, right, so it forms like an ohel over the ground, ne'eman lomar in tachtav kever. He is believed to say what? There is no grave here. There's no grave underneath this tree. Why? We'll say, same idea. Because what is he not testifying about? See, a kusi is not believed to say what? There is no tumas ohel over here. Right? That's he's not believed to say. But he is believed to say, no, no one's buried underneath this tree. Right? Lefi she'eno meyit ela al gufo shel kever. Because Rabbi say his testimony is not lagabe halacha, but his testimony is regarding a metzias. On Rabbi Yochanan, b'mehalech uba p'nei kula. Well, that's the case, Rabbi say, where the kusi is believed, where he himself is willing to walk along the whole field. So Rabbi say, if he himself is willing to walk along the whole field, then what? That's pretty indicative that he's confident that there's no davra atami there. Because remember, again, Rabbi say, kusim are careful with the halachos of tumantara. So if the kusi himself is walking the field, that is a good indication that halacha lamaisad is not a problem. Ihachi maila memra. So if that's the case, that the kusi is willing to walk the field, of course, he should be believed. Malditim, what would you have thought? Ritzua nafka. So I say, I might have thought that maybe there's another part of this field that halacha lamaisa, again, is really part of this field that most people don't know about. The kusi assumes that's where the grave is, but he's making a halachic call. The grave is on that ritzua, on that narrow strip, and not here. He's not sharing that with us. That's just his assumption. So he's made a call regarding safek tumah. So therefore, maybe I shouldn't believe him. Kamashulano. Kamashulano said that if you see him walking the field, that is a pretty good indication that halacha lamaisa, that halacha lemaisa, that he has concrete knowledge that the kever is not there. Zeh klal. So I'll say, remember again, the Mishnah ended off by saying, this is the klal. Anything that kusim are chashud, are suspect in, they are not believed to give edu. Zeh klal la'asuyei mai, la'asuyei tchumin v'yayin nesach. Rabbi said to include tchumin, ultimately again, kusim are not believed to say that tchum Shabbos goes until here. Very simply, why are they not believed to say tchumin? Because tchumin are dirabanan. Kusim do not keep dirabanan. Same idea about with yayin nesech. Yayin nesech is also a dirabanan. Ultimately, again, a kusi is not careful about allowing his wine to be touched by an akum. Therefore, again, kusim are not believed regarding those matters as well. So Rabbi says, so bottom line, halacha lemaisa, kusim, anything that they are nishar in, they have ne'emanos. Things that ultimately, again, they are not nizhar in, whether those are dirabanans or drushas that they do not subscribe to, ultimately, again, they are not believed. Interestingly enough, kusim are nizhar in tumantara. And last piece, which is fascinating, is a kusi is believed to give me a fact, right? To give me a metziastic fact. But ultimately, again, will not be believed to comment on halacha. So I will say, so sometimes the net result of that is the same, but the mechanics are quite fascinating. So to tell me that there's no kever underneath this tree, I could believe that. No one was ever buried here. To tell me that this area is not subject to tumas ohel, that don't tell me halacha. Don't tell me halacha. You could ultimately tell me facts. Hajun halach, damanid. I will say, mazel tov. Mazel tov. Amadeis, harach kesem abasara. Okay. We could do this. Good, a small little daf. Haro kesem abasara. So we'll say, if a woman sees, we'll say, now we're going to get back a little bit into some of the real hilchos nida. A woman sees blood on her flesh, on her skin. She sees a kesem, a stain on her skin. So we'll say, what's that halacha? So we'll say, so in general, you see where this is going, that what do you do with that? Meaning, do we assume that that's dam nida or some other kind of dam? So the Gemara says, it depends. Keneged beis atarfa, if it's by her makum erva, so tamea, then we assume ultimately it's dam nida. V'shelo keneged beis atarfa, but ultimately, again, if the dam is not by her makum erva, then tahora, ultimately, again, she is tahar. So the Gemara says, ala keva va'al rosh kodla, if she finds blood on her heel or on her big toe, tamea. Ultimately, again, we assume it's dam nida. We'll see why that is. Al shokava al parsosel, if she finds dam on her leg or on her feet, ultimately, again, mibithnim, if it's on the inside, tmeya, mibachutz tohora, inside, tmeya, outside, tohora. Again, we'll define all these cases in the Gemara. Valat stodin, mikana mikan, we'll say, ultimately, again, if she finds dam on the sides, then ultimately, again, tohora. Ra'asa al chaluka. What happens if she finds blood on her clothing? So mina chaga ulamata tmeya. If she finds blood, we'll say chaga literally means from the belt. So bepashlos, what that means is from the waist, right? If she finds blood on her garment from the waist, from the mina chaga ulamata tmeya. If she finds it from the waist down, she will assume it's tmeya. Mina chaga ulamala tahora. If she finds it from the waist up, it remains tahar. Ra'asa beis yad shel chaluk, if she finds blood on the sleeve of her garment, imagia keneged beis tarfa tmeya. If ultimately, again, the sleeve extends down to the makom era. We'll say, so apparently also, because they sometimes wore like cloak-like things, sleeves were often longer than just the arm itself. So like if the sleeve draped, or if the sleeve went down long enough that it could reach the makom erva, then ultimately, again, she's tmeya. Vim lav toref. Not ultimately, again, we assume that it's bought from something else. Haisa poshtaso miskasa babalayla. We'll say, what happens if this was the garment that not only did she wear by day, but she used it as a cover at night? Then what? Kamakom shinim sabo kasem tmeya. Then I will say, anywhere that you find a kasem, ultimately, again, she will be tmeya. Why? Mipnei shechozer, mipnei shuchos. Because we'll say, you know, anything that you use as a cover, what happens? It moves around over the course of the night. V'chein bepulyos. And I will say, the same idea, pulyos is literally a shawl. Right? Anything that a woman wears as a shawl also moves around on the body a bit, and therefore, again, it's quite possible that any ksamim that you will find in it, you'll have to attribute to Dan Nida. Says the Gemara, Amar Shmuel, Batka Karka Olam V'yashva Aleha. Was a fascinating case. Let's say she sits down on the ground. And before she sits down on the ground, she checks the earth where she's sitting down, and it's totally clean. Totally clean. And then what happens? V'yashva Aleha, she sits down, and when she gets back up, Matzah Dam, she finds blood. Right on the spot where she sat. So what's the halacha tahora? Ultimately, I get the blood of star. Now, what's now? Why is actually quite fascinating? Shinemar bivsara ad shetargish bivsara. Because we'll say the pasuk says by nida by yochos the veisha kisia zava damia zava bivsara. She feels the blood flowing in her flesh. So we'll say, what does this mean? Ad shetargish bivsara. We'll say the Gemara is introducing us once again to the concept of hargasha. And hargasha means that a woman must have a sensation, right, in order to become a nida. It is not enough, ultimately, again, to have a flow of blood, but there must be a hargasha. And I will say, we've spoken about this before, there's a fundamental machlokes in halacha as to what hargasha means, right? What is it? One thing is clear is what it's not. It is not the feeling or sensation of feeling something moist or wet on the outside of the body. So the fact that a woman will bleed and feel blood outside of her body pressing against her, that's not a hargasha. Hargasha is some type of internal sensation, a major machlokes harishonim as to what exactly it is. We're going to get into this. So the Gemara says, so therefore again, in this case over here where she sat down, she gets up, she sees blood, she's tahora. Why? Because there's no hargasha. There was no sensation. No sensation of the blood exiting her body. One second. Hi, bivsara mi boiler. I will say, one second. We use that bivsara for a different drasha. What's the different drasha? Shemetami bifnim kibachutz. To tell me what I will say, that a woman becomes a nida when, this is actually quite fascinating, when the blood is inside of her. As we'll say, even before the blood left her body, she is still tmei, even on the inside. Im kein lema krab bibasar. My bivsara, shmamina achatagish bivsara. So we'll say, if that's the case, the puzzle should have said bivasar. Why does it have to say bivsara? Bivsara, the Gemara says, means a hargasha. Vakati mi bari de bivsara velo b'shvir velo b'chaticha. But one thing we learned before, that bivsara teaches me the Torah was saying, the blood has to be absorbed in the vaginal canal itself. But if the blood ultimately comes out via a tube, or the blood is encased in a piece of flesh, then she doesn't become a nida. To which the Gemara says, you're right, tarti shamas mina. In reality, I will say we have more than one drasha from the word bivsara. Bivsara teaches us actually a number of things. It actually teaches us really three things. Number one, it teaches me that a woman ultimately, again, becomes tamei tumas nida even while the blood is inside of her body. Number two, it teaches me that in order to become a nida, that blood must actively pass through the vaginal canal, not encased in anything else. And number three, Bivsara teaches me that what? She must have a hargasha. There must be a sensation when she becomes a nida. Tashma, ha'isha she osa tzracha ha'baras adam. We'll say a fascinating case. If a woman is urinating and she sees blood. What's the halacha? Rabbi Meir says, im omedes tahora. If she's standing while urinating, she is tmeya. Vim yosheves tahora. But if she's sitting, then ultimately, again, she'll be tahora. Says the Gemara, hechi dami, what's the case? If she had a hargasha, then if she's sitting, why should she be tahora? Elalav delo argasha. Rather, it must be that what? She didn't have a hargasha. And yet, vekatani omedes temeo. Yet, they will say, what did we learn? That halacha lamaisa, if she's standing, she is still temeo. To which the Gemara says, what's going on over here? We'll say if she didn't have a hargasha, then even if she's standing, why is she tmeya? Liolum de hargasha. To which the Gemara says, the truth is, the case of Rabbi Osei is where she did have hargasha. What's the problem in this case over here? Is Rabbi Osei, we have a little bit of an inconclusive hargasha. Why? Because ve'emar hargashas mi raglayim havi. Rabbi Osei, we're going to get into this sugi now, which is actually quite fascinating, which is, although everyone will agree that you require a hargasha, but ultimately, again, where the hargasha could potentially be masked by another sensation is where we get into certain cases of suffix. So in the case of urinating, for example, Rabbi Osei, this is a situation of a potentially masked hargasha. Remember, Rabbi Osei, just one important piece over here. If a woman has a hargasha and she bleeds, she is in ida daraisa. If she bleeds and she doesn't have a hargasha, what's her status on a technical level? Tahora, right? Now, midrabanan is something different. But midaraisa, bleeding without hargasha, ultimately, again, is tahora. So we'll say, so the problem is in these cases where you have a little bit of a masked hargasha or a suffix hargasha. So she's urinating. So there's a sensation of urination. The shaila is the sensation of what she thought was urination, was there really a hargasha in there, not a hargasha in there, therefore it's a suffix. How do we deal with the suffix? Here's how we deal with it. To which the Gemara says, Omedes hadamir gain lamakrava aisidam. So we'll say, when she stands, and apparently again, for a woman to urinate when she's standing requires a greater amount of exertion. Therefore, there is a concern about say that dam nido could have been mixed in. It literally means that the urine went back into the uterus and brought out blood with it. We'll say that is not a biological or physiological statement, but rather, again, that's a statement about the exertion involved. Because there's a greater level of exertion, therefore, again, there's a greater suffix because that we declare her tummy. Versus Rabbi Osei, in the case of Yosheves, where there's less exertion in the case of urination, therefore she'll be Tahora. Good. Rabbi Osei, one other case, Tashma. Actually, Rabbi Osei, so again, what we're seeing in this case over here is you need a Hargasha to become an Ida, but in these cases where the Hargasha is a bit masked, right? We're not sure, was the Hargasha, was there not the Hargasha? So ultimately, again, Rabbi Osei, that's what we'll have to declare in certain cases out of Safek Tamei and certain cases out of Safek Tahar. Right, Rabbi Osei, we'll have to stop over here. I'll record a little bit more of it, Emir Sashem, today. We'll stop over here. Again, we'll continue with the cases of Hargasha, Emir Sashem, tomorrow.